Hello, my name is John Bernthal. And I feel extraordinarily lucky about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
That is really nice.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I had to take a second there before we started because Sona was yelling in the podcast studio.
And because you two are being dicks.
Well, I don't think that's the right energy to start a friendly show that basically is meant for children.
Oh.
This is a show by children for children.
On an intellectual level, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sona, you and Gourley were shouting about something, and I was just trying to get you to stop talking long enough and shouting so that I could start the program. That's all.
First of all, it's hard to have a human moment in this room because every time we talk about something fun, you're like, let's record it.
Because right. I want to capture the essence.
Can't some things just be between us?
No, yeah. No. It all must be recorded and then monetized. filthy riches, rubies, gold.
Yeah.
Well, Sona, you and Gourley were shouting about your eyebrows. What was that all about?
It's about hair removal.
Right. I don't want to talk about this because I upset Sona and I feel bad.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know. You know what? I shouldn't have gotten upset.
No, I think you were in the right.
No, that's not true. I shouldn't, but I reacted. I always react at a 10 when I should react at like a 2.
But you had reason to react.
I know.
And can this we is at how least, conflict
can we
starts.
At least let yeah. people know what the nature of the disagreement was?
Sure.
Well, I started off by saying, you know, listen, I have certain, there's,
what? Just say it.
I'm a hairy person and I have eyebrows that if I don't take care of them, they become a unibrow. That's just
a curse. Is that true? Your eyebrows are beautiful.
Thank you. That's because Alma shapes them and takes care of
Who's
them.
Who's Alma?
Alma's my girl.
Oh, and she does it with your permission. It's not like she comes in the night. You wake up. Alma!
I wouldn't mind it. And then Matt says, you also said you have a unibrow. And then I was like, oh, do you just take care of it yourself? And then you said, the way you said it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what you have,
just
you
snapped.
Your eyebrows would grow together if you didn't intervene?
Yeah, I have what would connect. Like, I wouldn't call it like a London Bridge, but it's like a rope bridge. You know, like it gets connected.
It has a little bit of a sag to it.
Yeah.
It's like a Raiders of the Lost Ark
exactly.
bridge.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
It's like a...
Actually, it's Temple of Doom, but let's, you know, go ahead.
All right. How about the Man Who Would Be King kind of bridge?
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
With Sean Connery.
And right. Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. Yeah, that's an amazing. That's a great movie.
I agree.
What year?
64.
Of course.
Oh,
it is.
No, much later than that.
I don't know.
That's a movie from the 70s. Okay. Someone check, please. I'm going to say that's 19. Oh boy, that could be 74.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No.
Eduardo,
where are
Eduardo?
You?
Jesus Christ.
The Man Who Would Be King. Now we went from unibrows to. I'm going to say 74.
I'll say 73.
1975.
And your first guess was 64. Interesting. So anyway.
You were wrong too, though. You were wrong also.
Oh, yeah. Off my whole year.
But you were still
on a
wrong.
Movie
still
I
wrong.
Movie I haven't seen in
still,
many years.
I still was able to name
Anywho,
the cast.
And Sean Connery in it, who you claim to love, but don't even know the year of one of his great movies. Anyway, my point is this. I don't even have eyebrows. You two are complaining about your eyebrows.
You can ask
I'm the
mine.
Dick Gephardt of comedy. Look it up, kids. It's a funny reference.
Who's Dick Gephardt?
Exactly.
Why can't you guys be better?
1964? Dick Gephardt?
No, I'm one of those guys who have my eyebrows are so faint.
Yeah.
That whenever this morning I had to do a thing, a friend asked if I would appear on a little short segment with him for a morning show. And I said, sure.
Eyebrow talk?
No, it wasn't called eyebrow talk. That show's been canceled.
Okay.
replaced by monobrow corner. But I went on the show and of course they spend the first 10 minutes giving me eyebrows I don't have. And one of the things is that sometimes they overdo it And I come out of there and it looks like someone has taken two pieces of electrical tape and put them over my eyes.
Yeah. Groucho.
And I'm suddenly
Faye
Groucho
Dunaway.
Marx.
No, not Faye Dunaway. Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford, yeah.
So anyway, you were saying, Sona, and back to the important part, that you need constant management of your eyebrows.
Yes.
How often does this woman need to tend to them?
Every 4 weeks, I think.
Wow. Okay.
3 or 4 weeks.
Would you ever want to just let them go just to see what would happen?
I did.
I'd like to see that. I bet
you'd
look good.
During the pandemic.
During the pandemic?
Yeah. Oh.
And what happened? You got crazy?
They were all over the place.
Right.
You know?
Probably didn't know when it was raining. Like they caught all the water.
You just looked at me like, am I okay?
Come on.
Did I go too far? Help me out, please.
No. I just was like, you're outside. And everyone's like, we got to get inside. It's pouring on you. Like, what are you talking about? It's not raining. These giant barriers.
And your friends are huddled under.
Yeah. That's when you notice people. Have you ever noticed people?
Don't stare at me,
Sona, in a rainstorm, have you ever noticed friends of yours gathering underneath you? Hello? Is this thing on?
I don't want to be a part of this.
Is this thing on?
Why are you getting me to do this? I apologize.
What? I know. And I appreciate that. Yeah. That's why I like Matt more.
And I'm glad that I captured this moment because this was an argument that was going to go unheard by the public. I'm also glad that I brought back the memory of Dick Gephardt,
yeah.
A famous politician a long time ago who had no eyebrows.
Yeah.
What an incredible thing for me to remember.
Do you want to say anything to me about that joke about people gathering under my eyebrows when it rains?
Yeah. I think it's a good visual. I think it's a funny gag. I think it's a solid joke. Wait, oh, you wanted an apology.
I do.
Yes.
I'm not asking rate your joke. When are you ever going to not rate your joke poorly?
Eduardo, what did you think about huddling under the eyebrows?
Hilarious.
Eduardo.
But the friends comment was, I thought Gordy made that comment.
What are you doing? Who do you think you are throwing me under the bus? You're new here.
I'm talking about a vulnerable situation where I'm hairy and you guys are just making jokes about it.
Well, I kind of can because I have a unibrow.
Yeah.
So I'm not joking.
So you
I'm
feel like, I see.
Yeah, and I
you're
take offense
a victim
at what you're
too.
Saying.
Yeah,
yeah.
I understand.
And that's why we got in a bit of a fight.
Yeah, and that's true.
Yeah.
You don't even have eyebrows, loser.
I know. Matt Smith.
Yeah. I'm a real Dick Gephardt. I'm telling you, it's a funny reference. Look it up.
If it didn't work the first time, it's not going to work the second or third
time. It's a podcast. How do we know
time?
It's not working? I hear so many laughs out there.
This hasn't gone out yet.
It will. Yeah. And I hear so many future laughs out there. People in rental cars all across America are howling at this one. People on their pods.
What?
Earbuds.
Oh, God. Oh,
what is happening?
Okay. We got to get started. We got to play
well,
a
we
show.
Haven't God. Even covered why we got in a fight in the first place. Isn't that not important? I don't care.
That's true. Because I said, do you do them yourself? And then I need you to replicate the
I
tone.
I got snarky.
Yeah.
Okay. So say what happened. So
Matt was saying, I was like, hey, do you tweeze your own middle of the eyebrows?
And I said, no, my wife does it.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were saying, like, do you have some fancy schmancy person that comes and does it? Well, turns out that's a real thing I didn't really realize. So I was making a joke about, no, I take care of my eyebrows like the common man.
What kind of tool do you use?
I don't know. Sometimes if I'm just trimming my beard, I'll just razor it off with the electric razor. Sometimes I'll just shave it with a razor if I'm shaving. I mean, I'm just, you know, devil may care. I'm a common man. I'm a blue collar worker.
Yeah.
You have eyebrows. They're just blonde.
Yeah. I do have eyebrows. They're just very, very light. And
that must be hard because most of your whole like life is you're doing weird faces.
Yeah.
You know, like you're like, doo.
You're less a Gephardt, more of a Mondale.
Wow. You too. Wow. You too.
Welcome to 80s A-Go-Go. These are 80s references that weren't even funny in the 80s. Next year, you're going to be doing, where's the beef? Yeah, we lost so many of our young listeners just now, but
young
that's okay.
Listeners.
We lost them a long time ago.
We never had them.
That's not true. I'm really down with the kids.
I'm really down with the kids.
Yeah.
Cool people don't say things like that, though.
It's true. When they're off in the clubs listening to Beck's, you know, loser baby.
Loser baby.
Okay, let's get going.
Okay.
My guest today, I'm excited about this gentleman. He's a very talented actor.
Yeah.
Who played Shane in The Walking Dead and starred in the Netflix series The Punisher. He also has his own podcast. I really like it. It's called Real Ones, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts. I said it before. I'm excited to talk to him today. He's a good man. A very talented gentleman, John Bernthal. Welcome. You know, I've always liked you. You came on our show a couple of times. We clicked and I was all excited you were coming on the show. And then I suddenly had an attitude about it this morning.
An attitude?
Yeah. And I'll tell you why.
Tell me.
Because a guy who works here, Aaron Blair, we call him Blay.
Yeah.
It's just before you're going to be here and everyone's excited that you're coming in.
Oh, boy.
Everyone here is a big fan.
Oh, man.
And I'm excited that you're coming in. No, I'm excited that you're coming in. And then Blay says, yeah, he's just amazing. He said, you know, it's weird. And he wasn't doing a joke. He said, Conan, in a lot of ways, he's your opposite. And I was like, what? And he went, you know, because he's so cool. And he's like a real man's man. And I was like, seriously. Yeah, and everyone in the room was like, yeah, he's like the alternate. And they meant it in the nicest way about you. And then I was like, shit, I think they're right.
I strongly disagree.
Listen, so I was just going to say, I was very tempted when you came in to fight you, but to wait until some moment when you were vulnerable. You know, I want to do it. I want to come at you when you don't expect it. I wanted Gorley to distract you. And I wanted to have like a large stick or something. So I was going to win in a completely and still, you would have taken the broken stick out of my hand.
I don't know about that. You know what's crazy is I have these memories of doing your show, and you were it's such a horrifying thing to do those shows, you know, when you're starting out, and you were so good to me. And one time I forgot my shoes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have it. You probably have no memory of that, but you gave me your own personal shoe. They were way too big and I wore them on the show, and you're so good to me. And then you
left with my fucking shoes. And ever since then, and you wear them even as the Punisher,
right?
You were wearing my shoes,
right?
Which didn't even fit the character.
That's not
what Frank Castle would wear. Right. And I was like, why the fuck is he wearing my shoes?
But I remember seeing you at, I think it was at one of these Hollywood, I never go to these things, but it was at Lizzie Kaplan's birthday party.
Yes.
Like on the
great Chateau, Lizzie Kaplan.
The best in the world.
And so I love smart, Lizzie. And so funny. Yeah.
And I saw you there and I was literally like, I've been on your show. Can I go say hello to you?
What?
And I didn't. Yes. I was too shy to do it, man.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So there it goes for Blay or whatever his name is. Nah, man.
He's right over there in the corner.
Oh, that's you, dude. Nah, man. Yeah. Me and him are the same. I'm as insecure as they get, man. I was like, shit, I wish I could go. And I literally was one of those like, should I? And I totally
okay,
went
down. Okay, so here's how one of the ways we're different. Just before we started rolling on this, we were chatting. And the conversation started to get really good. And I thought, wait a minute, why aren't we rolling yet on this podcast? That's how fun it is to talk to John. And I was like, we gotta get going on this. And the reason I wanted to start rolling is that you were telling a story that I can't tell.
Yes,
I were telling a story about being at the day before a wedding.
Oh, at Sean Carey.
And you got hit.
Yep.
You got into a fight and someone hit you with a bar stool from behind. Guess what? I don't have a story like that.
It's not, but look, by the way, just to be clear, I was trying to break up a fight and I got hit over there. We were talking about doctors and getting hurt on things like motorcycles when you make bad decisions.
Yep.
And I will never forget, I did. We had gotten into a fight. There's a lot of ex-pro fighters or pro fighters in Sean's family. And I was trying to break up the fight, not fight. And a guy hit me from behind with one of those outdoor bar stools. Oh. And I got knocked out for a second. And I had to get all these staples across my head. And they shaved that part of my head. And I had all this dried blood because I couldn't shower, you know. And then I had to do my best man speech looking like freaking Frankenstein. But I will never forget the look of disgust in the doctor's, you know, I went there to be treated. And it was just like, you fucking idiot. Like I don't, I have to
he
spend
was mad
my
at,
time.
He was mad at you.
Of course he was. Cause I'm out there. Probably he thinks I'm talking smack at a bar and probably thought I totally had it coming. And you know, I tried to sort of, you know, sell my side of the story to him. He wasn't interested at all.
But John, you don't understand. You have a story about breaking up a bar fight. By the way, if a bar fight breaks out, I don't break it up. Okay. I run and I start swiping for an Uber. Okay. All my stories that involve going to the hospital revolve around like the medication they prescribe. I put a little too much cream on my hand. Slightly raised reddish area. And yours is man, I'm trying to break up a bar fight. I get hit with a stool.
Yeah,
that's
bad.
How we're different. I got to be more like you.
I think you would have done the
teach
same thing.
Teach me to be like you.
Oh, no, man. Oh, no. Please. You teach me, man. I'm not the least bit proud of that. But I will say that, doctor, I could feel the palpable disgust. And that is why I do ride my motorcycle. And my wife did sort of make a deal with me years ago. She said it's either boxing or the motorcycle. And that day I rolled my motorcycle down the street and I gave it to, there was a guy, old Phil, who lived down the street, an old army vet. I gave him my motorcycle. But now, because of that bar stool, I get such terrible headaches when I box. I've quit sparring and I've quit mixing it up in the ring. So I'm back to the motorcycle now. But I am so afraid that if I do get hurt, the doctor is going to look at me with that same level of disgust. Because this is a decision that I made myself.
You understand? Right. Stop going to that doctor.
Yeah, maybe this doctor's like this with everybody.
You think that's right?
Yeah. Maybe when like a 75-year-old woman comes in and says, I think I have chest pains. You disgust me.
Weakly.
You.
Suck it up.
With your weak third ventricle.
Lupus, how dare you?
A blood disease. You know, it's funny because... I'm a massive fan of yours. And I first, like a lot of people, I first saw you on The Walking Dead. And that's when you started coming on the show and you just pop on the screen. You're so authentic. Mm-hmm. You're so, and you have such power as an actor. And it surprised me when I learned later on, you didn't figure that out that you had this, that acting was a possibility. So a little later in the game, you were in college, right?
Yeah. There just wasn't really anything kind of around me growing up that made me, you know, I had nobody really in my life that did it. And,
right.
And, you know, I don't know. I think now, you know, being a dad and seeing my kids and, you know, my kids like to play with action figures a lot. And,
right.
And I saw my oldest son, Henry, the other day kind of doing, I used to do that a lot. I used to play these little games and act out parts. So I guess I was doing a lot of that. I think I had a pretty wild imagination, but yeah, no real window into, didn't do a lot of youth theater. That's for sure. Yeah.
Right. Well, you were very heavily into, you know, boxing.
I was into some martial arts and some boxing, a lot of sports, baseball, football. And just, I was just kind of a knucklehead. I just kind of was getting into trouble left and right and really kind of lost, honestly. I had really good friends, but, I think I lacked direction.
So you feel like it could have gone badly for you, 100%. but you got off on the wrong exit, or you took the right turn, and that got you into acting.
Yeah, look, I mean, I met a woman. I was blessed to meet a woman in college. I took an acting class literally by accident. I thought I was signing up to Intro to Theater, which was going to be 150 people in a big theater. I thought I could maybe drop acid and watch movies. That's what I heard. That was the word on the street. But I ended up being the complete.
I took so many courses because of that.
You know what I mean? But being the shitbag that I was, I ended up, in this small intro to acting class with very serious, you know, acting majors and kids who really took it seriously. And I'd never really been around kids like that before. And, you know, there was an exercise that we had to talk about. We had to bring in something that was really important to us and share it with the class, like a game of show and tell on steroids. And the level of emotion that these kids had sharing these objects, I just couldn't believe it. Going on for 10 minutes about, you know, some corn cob pipe that their pap had given them some Blues Traveler CD that their boyfriend had given them. And then it got to me and I forgot, I just didn't have anything. I totally, you know, as always, just totally botched the assignment. So I just grabbed my catcher's glove before I was going to baseball practice. And I launched into this story about how my mom had died and she gave me this glove on her deathbed. And my mom is totally alive and well in DC. And as I was telling the story, I'm like crying my freaking eyes out. And everybody in the room is crying their eyes out. I'm like, whoa, hang on, y'all. I'm just doing the acting. And this woman, Alma Becker, I have her tattooed here. She cleared the class out and like ripped me apart for violating the sanctity of her studio. But then she was like, you know, you've got something and your punishment is you gotta audition for this play that I'm directing. And that was my first show. And then after, you know, I didn't finish school. I got in some pretty big trouble. And Alma came to me again and she said, look, if you really want to do this, I'll get you an audition to go to Moscow, the Moscow Art Theater. And that's the reason why I went out there. And she really saved my life and ended up marrying my wife and I. And I mean, it's a true testament to, I just think that the power of educators and teachers and believing in somebody, especially somebody who's lost and who has no real great talent or no, you know, I could fight a little bit. I could play a little bit of sports, but I wasn't going to do anything special with them. But she saw something in me and she jumped on it. I think now as a parent, I'm even more, there's this new profound kind of understanding or gratitude that I have for her and for teachers in general who do that. And I hope that these people, you know, come into my kids' lives, you know?
Well, they will. I mean, that's the other thing too, is when I reflect on my life, there's several key people along the way.
Sure. And I think the fact is that, I don't know what I love most about this is how often you fail and how often you don't know what the hell you're doing and how terrified you are before something starts. And I think, you know, embracing that and diving into that is at least for me, that's something that I try to do. But I'm also really, really aware that this could have gone either way so many times. And I think the humility of understanding that it's really the buoys along the path. It's these great people that led you this way or this way. If you're not really aware of that, you're not going to see them, you know, as you keep going. And for me, it's not just the great teachers that I had in Russia or those great coaches that I had. I mean, my best friend, Dougie Thornell, we grew up watching movies together. That's what we did. And we would sneak into Goodfellas and watch it over and over again. We snuck into the Silence of the Lambs, watched it over and over again. And it was so long. I mean, decades before I'd ever be able to, you know, sort of exercise those kinds of muscles as an artist. I mean, my first 5-10 years, I was a tree, or I was, you know, I was these old sort of avant-garde, you know, Bertolt Brecht characters that had nothing to do with the stuff that I was raised on. But it was always, I still to this day, anything I do, I try to take it back to the Dougie Thornell test. The two of us sitting on his couch used to duct tape the remote control to a ping pong paddle, and he would laugh his ass off at stuff, and I'm like, would this make Dougie laugh? You know, what would this do to Dougie? And right. it's a huge part of everything that I do, and I want to find the next person, and you never know who that person's going to be, and it's oftentimes I think not the genius that we think we're going to cross. It's this person that comes into our life, and if our hearts are open, our eyes are open, we'll see it.
Sona, where else can you go surfing and skiing the same day, huh?
I don't know.
Or check out a world-class art museum and then camp at a dark sky sanctuary that night, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, where else can you hike through redwoods and then get a luxury spa treatment?
Where?
Well, you live there. California. California, Sona. No matter where California. You go across the state, you'll find a way to play. I'm a California resident, so are you. Sona, you are a lifelong California resident.
I'm a lifer. I love this place.
This is a beautiful state. Gorgeous. So many different, wonderful ecosystems in one state. You can hang out by a Palm Springs pool. You know, you can go whale watching. You can go hiking in Yosemite. And then talk about the great cities in California. You get all this amazing food, sushi, whatever you want. They got it in California. Hey, if you can't find it in California, man, you got a problem.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. I made that up on my own. Anyway, I love California. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
You know, it's interesting to me that you get on The Walking Dead and you're on it from the beginning. And it's such this iconic character you get to play, and you really nail it. And then famously, you're killed not just once, but twice.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because you can't take John Bernthal out with just one. You got to, trust me, I've tried. This man will not die. And so you get off the series. And so there are a lot of people that might think, and then that's just, obviously, the series is just starting to gain momentum. And so there might be some people that would think, well, shit, I wish I could have stayed on for 10 years, 11 years. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think for someone like you, that frees you up.
For sure.
In its own way, it's a gift because then you get to go on and do all these other things and show who you are and show different sides of yourself.
Of course. Yeah. It's always, I really try to exercise not calling it, not saying it's one way or the other. You know, sure, at the time, I was like, well, this is right. This is just in line with everything else that's ever happened in my life. You know, it's like, here we are. I finally got on the show. It's finally taken off and boom, they got me the hell out of there. You know, like pack up your shit and go. And I remember going back to The Walking Dead to go pick up my truck. And I remember like walking out and seeing them sort of shoot this first episode that I wasn't going to be in. And I wanted to go say goodbye to everyone. And instead of saying goodbye, I just sat on this rock in the woods and just watched this beautiful sort of symphony of the barn was on fire and there were all these zombies. And I saw Norman doing his thing and Scott Wilson, rest in peace, just standing out on the, you know, bellowing and just this beautiful, you know, crew and these people there, my family. And I saw them all working and I just palpably understood that's, you know, I'm not part of that anymore. That's they're doing their thing. And I sat there and I wept and, you know, I felt sorry for myself and I knew it was over. And look, you know, the only thing I can look at with Walking Dead is just unbelievable, just full gratitude.
Yep,
and
yep.
Just full gratitude. Like what a privilege, what an honor, what a thing to play a character with a real beginning, middle, and end. But more than anything, you know, Steven and Norman and Scott and Melissa and Irony and Sarah and Andy. I mean, these are like lifelong friends who really taught me how to be an artist and a father and a husband all at the same time, and to trim so much fat off your life and whittle it down. And those are the guys, those are my closest friends, you know, in this business. And you know, those guys, I mean, they're beautiful human beings.
Yeah.
And
I've interviewed everyone you've mentioned. They're great people.
Great people.
I would have handled that differently. I would have been sitting on the truck and watching them shoot a scene without me now that I'm gone. And I would have just started screaming, I don't fucking need you.
Ruining every take.
You needed me. And they'd be like, Kai, Conan, can you please? You had two good years.
Yeah.
And roll. Let's go. Action.
Can we get him out of here?
Fuck you. And then I'd do like donuts in my truck.
Right,
be knocking over zombies.
Right.
They'd be like, come on, man.
Right. Blaring some Danzig. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know, man. I'll say it. I just like, you know.
You'll regret this.
Yeah. And anyway, you know, like, I think it's also okay to feel a second of that pain or to wonder but yeah, looking back at it without a doubt, you know, doing that show was the best thing that ever happened to me in my career. And then I think getting killed off was the best thing that ever happened to me in my career. And I'm flabbergasted and grateful for all of it.
I want to ask you about your podcast because I've been listening to it and I really like it. And I think one of the things you're doing on it, which I think is great, is, you know, obviously we do two versions of this. One is I talk to people like you, people in the business, people who are known, celebrities. Mm-hmm. And then we do another one where I talk to fans that have a question for me just around the world. And I've found that it's not that I prefer one to the other, but I, when I'm talking to just, you know, I could be talking to someone in Eastern Africa or someone in living literally in like Wales, and they have a question for me. I find that there's so much discovery there just talking to folk out in the world.
For sure.
And I know that a big thing on your podcast is trying to find people that have like a compelling story, but it's not about whether anyone would know them or not.
Yeah. And look, I love that. I love that about your podcast. I think unlike you, you know, you're incredible at this. Look, there might be a few people that listen to this because they're John Bernthal fans to this episode, but the people are listening for you because you're hilarious and you're insightful and you know how to get great
interviews. Well, as we've learned, there's a lot of people that are listening for Sona and for Matt too, yeah, which by the way, frustrates me to no end.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
We're trying to weed those people out. You're welcome to.
Are we?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't think we are. I think we're encouraging.
No, but you know, it's interesting because, I mean, this is one of the reasons I want to talk to you is I was listening to your podcast and you have the thing that I think is so important, which is you really are curious. You really do want to talk to these people. And your kind of mission statement, I think, is let's find common ground. Let's find stuff that we can talk about. And I mean, I've heard you talk to, you know, on your podcast, like Lena Dunham, like a celebrity, but I've also heard you talk to people who've done time in prison, people who've been through some stuff that, you know, maybe a lot of people would never encounter someone like this. And you're talking to them, you're really listening and you're really trying to connect. And to me, that's what makes it work.
Thanks, man. I mean, look, I'm so deeply grateful for the people that come on. And the fact of the matter is the vast majority of the folks that I have come on have never done anything like this before. And I know I'm asking a lot. And almost every single person that I've had on, I have a very, very deep, a close relationship with, and we have real history with each other. So I understand that I'm asking them to do something that they're not entirely comfortable with, but I do genuinely believe in each person, in their story. I think I've just been so, the sort of kernel of it just came out of being deeply, deeply frustrated with just the state of discourse in this country. I felt that everything is agenda driven. So many of the major issues that we talk about are sort of being led and discussed by people who have no real experience in that issue. And, you know, it's a big part of it was coming out of COVID. You know, my cousin, Adam Schlesinger from the band of, from the band Fountains of Wayne, he passed really early in COVID, way too young, left two daughters behind. And it really kind of, it hit our family very, very quickly and right off the bat. So we were very serious of sort of staying isolated up in Ojai and we really weren't leaving for any reason. And then, you know, when George Floyd came around, you know, and that uprising started, I really wanted to be a part of it. And I saw what happened to Mr. Floyd, as we all did. And I was disgusted. I was horrified. And look, I'm someone who's been beat up by the police before. You know, I'm someone who has a little bit of experience with that. And I remember exactly where I was when I saw the Rodney King tape. I remember exactly where I was when I heard that verdict. And these were sort of key moments in my life. So I was out there and I wanted to be out there. But at the same time, I turn on CNN and I turn on Fox News and I would see these protests and I would see people throwing bottles at police officers and people riot gear. And each person under that mask to me is also a father, a mother, a brother and sister. I have really, really good friends in law enforcement, close lifelong friends. So every time I'd go out, I'd also go by a district or a police station and show my support there. And it just seemed like there was this vacuum where I couldn't be for both things, where you had to pick a side.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, folks who really walk the walk, they don't just talk about it. They have deep respect and even reverence for folks that are on the quote unquote other side because they're rubbing elbows with them. They're working with them every day. My friends who are police officers down in Newton have deep, deep respect for the community. My friends who are in the community down in South Central, down in the Pueblos, they see things that police officers do every day that they have deep respect for. Of course, there's times where they're completely on the other side and there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of hostility. But these people are actually in the middle of it. And my whole idea was let's bring folks on that walk the walk. Don't just talk about it. And let's hear their stories. And let's see that they care about what their kids are doing. They care about their families. They want what's best for this country too. And what I find is all this agenda driven, we're on one side or the other. That's really a discussion for people who have the luxury of sort of staying in the safe sidelines. But the folks that are there in the middle, they've got way bigger fish to fry. And again, they're constantly looking for these points of connection. And it's been a fascinating ride. We have, you know, teachers and surgeons and police officers and inmates and special forces soldiers and nurses and firefighters. And but again, each one of them are people that are deeply, deeply respected from the community that they're in. I think their stories are fascinating. And most of all, you know, we're really connected. They're people I really, really know. And so the sort of leap of faith I'm asking you to take is that when I say this person is a, you know, quote unquote real one, you got to trust me on it.
Well, that's the thing is I've noticed when I listen to it, and this is what I found compelling. Sometimes you'd be talking to somebody and I could tell they weren't familiar with microphone.
Definitely.
Meaning they, you know, most everybody I talk to knows how to speak into a microphone. Not that it's a hard thing to know, but there's a shyness almost that comes when you're talking to, you know, a firefighter or a nurse or someone who's, you know, just come out of prison. Their approach to it is not like a broadcaster or a performer or someone who's been on a press junket. they're approaching the microphone sometimes in a little bit of a different way, and they're quieter. And I find that that pulls me in because I know that what you're capturing an authentic person here, and you're not trying to get them to be something they're not.
And their motive is not, you know, their motive is
selling.
They're not selling anything. Yeah. And I think it's a very trepidatious and very, I mean, a lot of these folks, I mean, my one friend who's a smoke jumper, you know, a career forest firefighter, you know, we've been talking for weeks about coming on, and look, he's a guy who, you know, when the forest fires come up in Ojai, you know, I've fleed from the forest fires, fled. What is it? Fled.
Anyway, fled. Just get the fuck out of there. We can all agree that that's the correct terminology.
But that's what you do. That's what one does. But he goes right into it and was really part of the reason that kept our town safe from the Thomas fire. But he's very, very trepidatious and worried about coming on. He has something that he wants to say. He wants to talk about the PTSD that's run rampant in firefighters, and that there's really not been, you know, we talk about in soldiers, we're starting to talk about it a lot in law enforcement, but not for these guys and what they see every single day, and that they're sent right back out to the field. And so he's got something he wants to share, but there's not a lot of practice. There's nothing slick about it. And look, it's part of the reason why, you know, we also make it doubly hard because there's cameras too. And I think that that's part of the experience, you know, really seeing these people open up, seeing what's really important to them. And again, I just have so much respect and reverence and genuine love for the people that I come, that come on.
The other thing is, when you're talking to people like that, the fact that they're not always eager is a sign to me of also authenticity.
For sure.
Because there are so many people in our culture that are like, come on, I want my camera time, or I want my podcast time because I've got a story to tell. And that's fine. But there are so many people out there who are incredibly courageous people with amazing stories to tell. And almost their reticence to me makes them more valuable, more special somehow, because they're not promoting themselves.
Couldn't agree with you more.
I've tried many times to go on The Real Ones, and they've said I've done nothing brave.
No, haven't.
I have. No, John has said you've exhibited no bravery, and you're not an authentic person.
Come on, Cody.
And,
come on, man.
That's right.
And I said, you know, I think
you're brave in your self-promotion. You know,
yes, thank you.
Your shamelessness.
Yes, thank you. See, and you know what, John, that's a form. I think that's what you're missing. You know, you look at me and you see a guy who, yes, flees long before the fire even broke out.
Yeah.
And probably started the fire.
Maybe started it. And also, I'm just constantly fleeing in case there is danger. Yeah. And you're looking at a guy and you're thinking like, yeah, he's not. But I think in my shameless self-promotion, I am a hero.
Yeah, well, I didn't say hero. I'm courageous.
You know what?
No one said hero.
I heard hero.
No one said that.
You know what? I think it's the microphone. Eduardo, check the microphones, because sometimes I hear hero when someone's saying coward.
Stop that. We would love to have you on, man. You would love it.
You know, I would like to just like completely changing topics, but I know that you've been, you know, trained as a fighter. And I just was thinking to myself, I know I'm long in the tooth, but there are times in my life where I think maybe now I could pick it up. Maybe I could pick it up now. I'm not even kidding.
Are you being serious?
Because it's such a great workout.
You absolutely
analyze me as a fighter. I've got the height and the reach.
That reach that you got, you got those long arms.
Right.
I would want nothing to do with you, man. Seeing you in the gym, if you just walked in, I would look at the length is a serious, serious thing. And here's what I'll tell you.
I am, but you can't punch someone in the face.
John Bernthal is telling me that I have it to.
Why do you have to punch someone in the face? Why can't he just punch a bag or hit a hand pack and start training?
There are some people I really want to hit.
We'll get there. That's always
one of them's in this room.
Hey, but I'm scrappy. I'm rope-a-dope.
Yeah, I'd love to see the two of you.
My problem is, I think it would be, could I take a punch? You know,
I think you could, man. I think you could. I think it's a lot of.
I got my nose smashed in. I got jumped by a bunch of people when I was. I graduated high school, and it was before I started college, and I wandered into sort of a dicey neighborhood in Boston, and I realized I was in a neighborhood I wasn't supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. And I was wearing a t-shirt that had the Irish flag on it, which I'm not kidding. That had been a gift from my uncle who had been to Ireland and it had the Irish flag on it. I wasn't thinking about it, but apparently I was in an Italian neighborhood. So I got my nose smashed in by some fellows who didn't like the cut of my jib. That's how I described them to the police. Who hit you, Mr. Bunny? There were these fellows! They didn't like the cut of my jib. But after that, I thought like, man, and the police were asking me like, well, what'd you do when you realize you're about to get hit? Like, what stance did you go into? And I went, stance? Because I'm told I had been a little bit of a wise guy.
Yeah. Well, you know what's crazy about that is you actually told me that the first time ever did your show, you said, because we talked about the size of my deformed, just disgusting excuse for a nose and how many times it had been broken. And then you said to me, and then in the pause, in the commercial break, I leaned over to, and I've always been so intrigued about what the hell people actually talk about in those moments. Because besides with you, it's always been a super, super awkward conversation I've had.
No, we had a great conversation.
But that one, I went over to you and I said, hey man, those guys that hit you, do you think they now know that they hit you? And you looked at me like I was and you were like, dude, it was before I was in college. I just said that. And then the next time I saw you, I tried to bring it up with you, but I think I kind of failed again, man.
You didn't fail. No. I think I just was thinking like, no, those guys have no idea.
But you don't think
that
now
they beat up Conan O'Brien. And no? If they did, they'd be like, good.
You are a memorable figure.
A memorable figure, man. It's Conan O'Brien, right?
But, yeah. We beat up a giant, very pale, kind of redheaded guy. And then, they beat so many people up that they don't remember?
I don't know.
That's the rub. If they're hitting them just for the flat, but you know, there could have been other reasons that they hit you, which could have been, you know, your size, your other things.
Also, they asked for money and I said no. And they said, why not? And I said, I don't feel like it. And the time between me putting the period on don't feel like the T of don't feel like it, I didn't even see it coming. It was like bang, bang, bang.
And then the anti-Italian word that you threw at him right before you did that.
I swear to God, I did not do that. Then I would have had it coming. But the funny part of the story to me is that my mom got called and she was at work. And the person who called her from like the emergency room, because I just walked to an emergency room and just blood everywhere. The person who called her said, we have your son here, Conan. He was attacked by a mob. And she said, attacked by a mob. And my mom went, yeah, okay, I'm coming. Didn't even question. Knew that like, yeah, that wise guy, I'm sure a mob. She didn't question it at all. She's like, yeah, I'm on my way.
Were you by yourself?
I was with a friend of mine who I didn't see for many, 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 many years. And then a couple of years ago, my friend John and I reconnected. And one of the first things we talked about was, I said, you were there that day. And he's like, oh yeah, I remember. You know, you were being a little bit of a wise guy.
Wow. So it was you, skinny, tall you in an Irish flag t-shirt walking through what I imagine is like the Robert De Niro version of Godfather.
Yeah, it was 1917.
That's right.
Finucci drove by in a Model A. And he just wanted Mary to wet it. He just wanted cart. To wet his beak. He just wanted to wet his beak, you know? He didn't want too much. It was through.
That's amazing.
But anyway, I think that's when I realized like, no, I it is a great form of exercise. Yeah. And I grew up as one of six, a couple of brothers and constant like fake fighting, but also real fighting, mm-hmm. wrestling. Mm-hmm. And so that has been my relationship with a lot of other males in my life has been a man. And my son, even when he was a little kid, when I see him, I would chase him and tackle him and we would roughhouse. I don't do it now because over COVID, he grew to be exactly my height. He's 6'4" and he's really fucking strong. And so now when I, quote, have a fun wrestle with my son, suddenly my head is going through a wall.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, maybe we're going to, let's play Hungry Hippos.
Take it to him.
So I need you to help me. Tell me where to, you know, you're encouraging me. You're saying I could go, I could work on a speed bag.
There is literally a gym right down, Steve Petromali's gym is right down the street. He's the best in the world. You could start training there. You would never regret it. And you would whoop the snot out of your son when you're done.
You know what? This is the best podcast episode we've ever done.
You should not be empowered any more than you are.
I know. I'm worried about what's going to
all for it, dude. I'm going to be
but
in
also,
your
But also, John, keep in mind, I use the old style. I am a turn of the century boxer.
Dude, you're a full-on pugilist. I can see it, man.
I have a sash tied around my waist. I'm bare-chested.
Fake mustache that curls up on the side.
Years ago, when I hosted Saturday Night Live, I told them, the writers beforehand, there's one sketch I want to do. I want to play an Irish boxer. I think you can look at it. I think it was in year 2000, but I play a boxer who boxes this style, but I'm going against a real boxer.
That's
and
amazing.
It's just me getting pummeled, but I'm doing this and bouncing up. And I've always thought, what would it be like if a guy tried to do that today against like Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah,
Come here, Floyd. I'll give you a pasting. Come step in, Floyd. I'll show you. I'll give you some creamed corn. You know, that kind of bullshit.
Oh, my God.
I love it, man. I love it.
Creamed corn.
Yeah, that's my favorite insult. I'll give you some creamed corn.
Okay, you're going to get beat up so bad.
That's probably what I said to the Italian.
Step up, fellows.
Yeah.
I'll give you some creamed corn. Kabang! 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 Mrs. O'Brien, your son's been attacked. I know, by a mob.
The creamed corn thing. Yeah.
It sounds like John didn't do a damn thing, huh?
Yeah, really.
John was smart. It happened fast.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much, and I'm not on John at all because this was not a long fight.
Yeah, fair
this
enough.
This was not a fight at all. I was a giant Hummel figurine, and I think there was one or two punches, and I shattered. And then John had a dustpan, picked up the pieces, and took me to the emergency room. John was very nice. He took good care of me after I had quickly inflicted all the damage on myself.
Listen, if you're one of these Italian youths that remember hitting Conan O'Brien back then,
if you want to come on the real ones,
yes,
by the way, By the way,
That's right. John's not even going to call me and say they tracked him down. I'm going to just hear like, we got someone on today. He took some wrong turns back in the day in Boston. He punched out Conan O'Brien. Yeah. But you know what? He's a guy who made his mistakes. He's owned it. And you're not even going to give me a heads up, right? Anyway, just to show our appreciation for you coming on the show, we bought you a Dodge Charger. It's out front. I'm gonna call you. Wait, you gave him a car? Hey, he seemed like a good guy.
Yeah, man. He's going through it.
Yeah. Now you do your podcast wherever, right? Do you go to them to do your podcast?
A little of everything. So there's a biker bar restaurant called the Deer Lodge in Ojai, which is wonderful. We've done a lot there, and then we've done some out of my house. We go a lot. We've been doing a series out of Calipatria State Prison, which has just been fascinating. We go to the prison. We've had full access of you know, all the yards and the we've been able to go into the housing units, and you know, that's just been most of what we've been doing there is talking to this community of guys there. It's called the LWAP community, guys who are serving life without parole, and it's really beautiful what these guys have done. They've kind of all banded together. They just really push each other and encourage each other to sort of try to find some sort of hope. And they're in classes, they're in program, and it's really changed the entire kind of culture and mindset of the prison. I mean, these are guys who literally have living death sentences. One of them, Brett May, he's gone and gotten all his degrees. He's now a paralegal. He's just constantly working to make his family proud. And what I've seen more than anything is they just have this unbelievably cogent and intimate relationship with the crime that they committed and with their victims. They've gone through this real process of shame and explored every single ripple effect of the horrible things that they've done and who it's had an effect on. And every breath they take, every moment of their life now is sort of living in service of that and in awareness of that. And they wear their crimes really with them. And I think again, it goes back to fatherhood. I'm sure you're sort of the same way, but for me, I know what it's like to be separated from my kids when I'm working and that kind of pain. And it's a special kind of, you know, I go do a movie and, you know, I got to be all in because I'm, you know, that's kind of how I work. And there's this pain because you're missing out. There's also this shame with it because you're not there and this guilt. And, you know, it's really taught me so much about parenthood, there's no way you can tell me that these folks don't love their kids and, yeah. and aren't completely committed. And even though they literally can only see them in these sort of, you know, mandated, you know, termed visiting hours, every single second, these families and these men have their kids on their minds. And it's a beautiful thing to see. And it's a real exploration of redemption. And in no way am I trying with any of these people to say, hey, this is the way, or hey, yeah. let's get, but it's just hearing people talk and hearing their stories and hearing where they're coming from. I really feel, you know, that all of us feel hopeless at some times, and let's look at somebody who really experiences it in a daily way, and they're finding hope, then they're using certain techniques to find that hope. And again, that's now permeated all through the prison community, and it's been a beautiful thing to behold, and I really feel honored that I get to be there.
You know, it's interesting because when you talk about trying to bridge these gaps and seeing how polarized things are, I think we all notice that someone used a really good word for it, which is people are siloed, meaning the way a missile is in a silo. If you're you know, on the far right, you're in your silo, and if you're on the far left, you're in your silo, and there's no interaction between That's the right. two. And I keep thinking, what is the basis of that? And what I have this idea recently that I'm thinking about, which is I'm tired of people pretending that it's simple when life is extremely complicated.
That's it.
And I think more and more that, and I'm talking about both sides, if you're on the far right and you're watching that kind of media, everyone is saying, it's really simple. Here's what we have to do. We have to get back to the good old days. And it can be, you know, here are the six things we have to do, and it's very simple. And that feels wrong to me. And then I look at sometimes the far left, and they're saying the same thing, which is, it's really very simple. These are the six things we have to do. And I think it is incredibly complicated. And so sure. I just like it when I talk to people who admit it's complicated. Life is complicated. Solutions are complicated. So we need to be listening to each other. Maybe let the person finish their sentence before you cut them off and say, no, you're wrong. It's really simple.
People don't have the answers. And there's something really refreshing in hearing that. And I think, you know, when we go into that prison again, and you start talking to some of the guards, some of the people that have worked there for years, decades, stab wounds all over for when it was a really violent place. And when things were all completely divided racially, they still can point to times where they saw things in the inmate population that they have deep, deep respect for,
right.
and vice versa. It's a community. Those people, they don't have the luxury of not working it out. They have to work it out. And to me, I think, you know, we've been reduced, as you said, I love the way you say it about silos. It's so easy. It's so comfortable just saying, okay, well, they're the bad guys. We're the good guys.
They're idiots.
And so they're
and
idiots.
We're
it's
smart.
So easy. And, yeah, and we're, yeah. you know, human beings were driven for things to be comfortable, but anything in this, your career, you know, any athlete's career, a fighter's career, a doctor, a lawyer, anybody that's achieved anything, you know, has gone through a little bit of pain. It's been difficult. You got to dig into that. You got to dig into the wound. And I think all this sort of flag waving from either side, all this bombast and this rhetoric saying it's them. I can't think of anything less American. And I think the thing that mm-hmm. frustrates me is that patriotism and masculinity, for that matter, is getting confused with being completely steadfast in your views,
right.
saying, I'm not going to bend. I'm not going to change. It's my way or the highway. When to me, that is literally the definition of cowardice. That is literally the most un-American.
Well, that's
sit down with somebody.
That's one of the things that I think is really good is you talk about masculinity a lot. That comes up a lot. Does not come up on this podcast for reasons that still escape me. No, but seriously, John, like you talk about it, and I think you have it's a great vantage point you have because you can talk about it from this place of having experienced, you know, or having experience with toxic masculinity or people thinking that about you because of, you know, whatever difficulties you've had in the past or the fighting or whatever. They can just think like, oh, this is the point of view this guy's going to be coming at me from. And then for you to talk about how that can be a toxic formula and is not the answer gives you an authority in that. I think that other people, it gives you a power to talk about that subject that maybe other people don't have. You
know, look, I mean? I don't know if I have any power in it. And I don't, honestly, with the sort of terms that people throw out there, I don't know. I'm no authority on that. I know that I'm a father and I'm a father of two boys. And I know the kind of men that I want them to grow up to be and the kind of young men I want them to be. And I know the kind of models of masculinity that I want them to see. And I think, you know, sometimes I've talked about this before, and I think sometimes it gets confusing. And I think that I don't know, I do believe in discipline. Mm-hmm. I'm somebody, my kids, you know, they practice martial arts. They know, you know, they know how to handle themselves in the woods. You know, I really think it's enormously important, not for them, but also just as equally important for my daughter to be able to defend themselves and to be able to handle themselves and to, like, these things are, these sort of cornerstones of, I think, you know, classic masculinity are super, super important, but equally important is being kind, is being empathetic, is to stand up for somebody who has less rights than you, somebody who's being picked on, somebody who's being put into the corner, somebody who's just sad. Getting in touch with a side of them that's softer, having the courage to do that. I had a guy on my show that I've just learned so much from, a dear friend of mine named Kevin Vance, who's a Navy SEAL and a firefighter, and just this wonderful human being. And he talks about the code of the samurai and how they knew how to fight and they knew how to use swords and they were warriors, but they also had to get in touch with their quote unquote feminine side and their ability to do calligraphy and to dance and to cook and to garden, and that these things are all equally important and to be well-rounded. But again, when it's confused with being hardened or being picking on somebody or again saying it's my way or the highway, to me that reeks of such fear and such insecurity.
Yep.
And it's a classic rule in the boxing gym. I've said it before. When you come into Steve Petromali's gym, you're gonna see.
Oh, I'm coming in.
I know you are.
And I'm coming in hard.
I know, man. Well, look, my point is that in the in any boxing gym in this country, you can see it. The guy who's the loudest, the guy with the brightest color clothes, the guy who's kind of, you know, dancing around.
That's me. That's all three.
Well, look, I think that will change because I think that is almost always the guy you don't need to worry about. Yeah. But it is the guy who smiles at you and shakes your hand and nods and says, hey, man, you want to move a little bit? Like, you got to deal with this guy.
I'm coming in wearing bright shamrock shorts.
Let's go.
And an actual peacock tail.
Let's go. A peacock tail and a monocle.
I love it, man.
Listen, I want to make sure I get the word out because your podcast is doing well. Real Ones is available wherever people get their podcasts, right?
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, Spotify.
And John Bernthal, Real Ones. And it's very refreshing.
Thanks.
Because you're talking to real people about real things and you do have the touch. You are able to connect with these people. I think that's cool. And, you know, if you ever need help out there in the world, you know, if you get into a tight corner and you need a guy to come in and swing these meat hooks around.
Not him.
Don't call me.
Yeah.
What? Don't call me because I'm a terrible, I do not have your back.
Come on. That is beautiful. That is beautiful.
I'm being honest. Yeah, I wanted to end honestly.
I love it.
I'm a kicker. I'm a guy who kicks and then runs.
That's great.
Yeah.
A little scratch maybe.
A slap. I can't make a fist, but I slap and then I run. I'm a slap and run guy.
I love it.
And, but anyway, John, just a huge fan.
Thanks, man.
So nice of you to come in and proud to know you, really. You're doing good work.
Right back at you, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you, guys.
Well, I just have to say it. Everybody here in the studio has what I call Bernthal fever.
Yep.
Ladies, very happy that he stopped by.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say this, he's a man's man.
Yeah.
So the men, very pleased to have him here. Eduardo, I saw you.
I was impressed.
Okay. Now tell us what impressed you about John Bernthal.
Very charismatic dude.
Mm-hmm.
The veins that stuck out of this guy's neck when he was relaxed.
Yes.
Right.
He's so strong.
Taut.
That he has just veins protruding out of his neck and it's just, they're there.
I'm sorry, I didn't know this was a thing and I'm constantly, my life has been a series of humiliations, obviously, but I'm constantly hearing about aspects that a dude, that women like, that a guy has. And I think, wait, we have to have that? Like I knew we're supposed to have broad shoulders and we're supposed to work out and have arms and all these things that I neglected to do. But then when I hear, oh yeah, he has veins in his neck.
Yeah, well, I didn't like, well, know. Okay,
I'm sorry, I don't have veins in my neck.
We didn't know that's what we wanted until we saw John Bernthal in here, and he had them. And then I was like, okay.
Not only do
well,
I
maybe
not,
he's got high blood pressure. Should we be worried about it?
Right.
No, what if he doesn't.
Not
you
only do I
doesn't.
Not have neck veins that show, I might not even have veins in my neck.
You know what?
You know,
I'm with you on this.
Yeah.
I went and had an MRI recently. They found no veins in my body. They said the blood is just sloshing around loosely. And they said that I was, they did. They said I was technically more jellyfish than man. They said I'm a big bag, a 6'4" bag, and stuff is sloshing around inside. Yeah, yeah. And then John Bernthal comes in here with actual veins.
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm the loser?
Well, do you think John Bernthal would compare himself to a jellyfish?
No. You're,
the things that you say sometimes, it's like, come on, dude.
Okay, well, so I understand I'm no Bernthal. I get it. I was impressed, too. I really like the guy a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy, I want him at my side when the apocalypse comes.
Yeah.
Because I've seen him in action in all these different shows that he's done and all these different roles that he's done. This guy knows how to handle himself.
He's the real deal.
He's the real deal. I want him at my side.
Right.
My friends now, who I love my friends. They've been my friends for like 30 years.
Yeah.
But you know that like Rodman, Greg, if trouble breaks out, all three of us are going to faint at the same time.
You're going to faint. And then what are you going to, how are you going to, like, how, what are you going to contribute to society? Like a sitcom?
Yeah.
With no cameras.
Yeah, there'll be no cameras left and no actors. And the three of us will be in the woods making something kind of arch and witty. And we'll say, this is what we have to, and then three arrows go into us simultaneously. And we're eaten. We're eaten. Our protein is robbed from our bodies. My thing is that, yeah, I saw Eduardo, Blay, I saw you gazing at him. And Blay, you were the one who, to be fair, before he showed up, and I'm trying to psych myself up for the interview, you said, you know what, I love him. He's so the opposite of you, Conan. Yeah. Why would you say that?
I love his work, obviously.
So that's why he's the opposite of me.
But I will say, and I'm trying to think of a way to say this that's not going to come off
just go
bad.
For it. Just go for
he's
it.
He's got such like, first of all, he's also very funny.
Yeah. Yep.
Very chill, cool energy. He just smiles at you and your chest just opens up. Now, I'm not saying around you that I'm not always on my guard and you give off this energy that maybe is, it's like being near high voltage lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's just, I felt just like, I was just melted. Didn't he? Like, just being around him,
he's intense.
Blake did say if they were going to do a remake of Twins, they would do it with you and John Bernthal.
So instead of Schwarzenegger and DeVito, John Bernthal would be the Schwarzenegger and I would be the DeVito.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't take that as an insult at all. I admire DeVito a great deal. I think he's a terrific performer and actor, and I'd be happy to fill his shoes.
Completely agree. I just think it's
what you're saying is that I give off an electrical charge that makes you tense. And right now you're clenching.
I'm nervous.
Your whole body is clenching.
I'm nervous you're going to like, I know you're, I'm out of arm's reach, but I'm still nervous you're going to come around the table.
Hold on. I'm trying to see if I could reach you. No, I can't.
I'm nervous.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. I always identify people who, we always look towards what we're not. And I'm like looking at John Bernthal and I'm thinking, he's got some groundedness that I don't have. And I'm sure, please God, have this be true, that there are some qualities I have that John wishes he had. That's not happening right now, is it?
No, there are. It's
John's
don't
driving
be
home.
So hard
John's driving home right now. John's driving home, thinking like, "There's no quality Conan has that I want."
Oh no, yeah.
No. What I'm saying is, I do understand why everyone here is smitten with John.
It's the
Bernthal.
Same thing with Goldblum. There's an otherworldly X factor. Like he's Bernthal's got old school Hollywood charisma.
Yes,
like
yes, he does.
Bogey, or even he reminds me of Fred Ward. Do you remember that actor that recently?
Oh, Reno Williams Strikes Again.
Well,
The Adventure of Reno Williams.
Actually, no, it's Reno Williams, The Adventure Begins.
Okay.
But it's just,
oh my God. I almost took my own life right there.
Wow.
I think of him in The Right Stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Tremors.
Yeah. Great actor.
Oh.
Yeah, no, he has that kind of
Tremors.
He has that kind of energy.
But it's like,
and you also see it in Remo Williams. Here We Go.
Okay, so, it's not real. It's not real.
Wait,
it's not real. It's not even joke about. Don't even joke about.
No, what is it called?
It's called Remo Williams: The Adventure Begins.
I think that's what I said.
Oh, that's not what you said.
No. Well, anyway, he's in Tremors. He's in Right Stuff, and Remo Williams. One More Time.
Okay.
Around.
Oh,
Cast cast a deadly spell.
Okay, yeah. Fine, but let's just go back a little and correct our errors here. Okay.
Remo Williams gets it done every time, and let's have fun.
Fun's fun. We're having fun. Okay. But let's take this seriously.
Okay.
I think what I thought was cool about him, I mean, a lot of the actors are like, oh, I had a theater background and I went to like school for it and stuff. But then he comes and he's like, oh, yeah, I got beat up by people. Yeah. I got beat up. I fought a lot of people. Yeah. And that's just like, that's just cool.
Well, can I say something? And I want to just stress to our listeners, I don't think one should try to get beat up. I just don't. I think, and Sona's putting the message out there to a lot of impressionable
that's
young people
just
listening.
Cool to get just beat up. No, look, I didn't mean it like that.
No, but you know what I mean? You know that I've been in many a scrape in my day.
No, you haven't. And, you talk about the one fight you've been in.
No. I've been in countless. Because I can't remember them all. So many times I've woken up on a floor with glass in my ear.
No, that's a
it's
different.
It's the one glass where they smashed your nose. They smashed your nose in. That's the one fight you've been in. That's okay. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
It wasn't even a fight. And it's going to turn out later on that I fell asleep in front of an Acer computer.
I remember one time you told us
and fell on the keyboard.
You got a big gash in your leg because
I was carrying trash.
And somebody put a tuna fish can in the.
My God. Yes.
That doesn't count. Oh, you shouldn't even say that story.
You make me feel like John Bernthal.
I got punched once. One time, my mother said, you have to take out the trash. I was wearing shorts. And someone had put a tuna fish can in the trash bag, and it chunked up against my. I still have the scar there. I had appendicitis.
Oh my god!
And I had shingles in one eye. These are so. Don't tell me I haven't been in my share of scrapes in
How
my time.
How do you not know the authentic title to Remo Williams?
Yeah, I've constantly. I've constantly been in the shit. Constantly been in the shit.
And you had shingles in one eye.
Yes, I did.
So you had shingle?
I had shingle in one eye. And tell me that wasn't the equivalent of being in a massive prison brawl. You know? I've gotten into it, and I'll get into it again.
God.
I'm a real brawler, a king mixer. Once you see these ham hocks coming your way, you best find cover. That's what I say.
Oh, man.
I'm getting the sign to rap.
Nothing more intimidating than a rhymer.
That guy just rhymed. We better get the fuck out of here. Hey, it worked for Ali. That's all they feared was
his
rhymes.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
All right. Trust me. I'm an amazing brawler. Let's just leave it at that.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Becton. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.